Good afternoon or evening or morning, whenever you're listening. Welcome to the Grovecast. This is a podcast by the pastors of Cedar Grove for the people of Cedar Grove. And I want to welcome, got Kale with me today and Jason running the board. And we're kind of joking about we still got to get on our catchy intro theme song. But Jason refused to whistle anything to get us going into this. So we'll have to work on something else a little bit later. But guys, welcome. We're gonna start today with a series, what we're gonna call kind of the family series, and do a 3 or 4 podcasts related to just family issues in general. We're gonna cover a large, maybe direction or set of topics in this.
And so we can always come back and hit some more specific issues later on.
And then one of the things I want to encourage our listeners, if you know, as you're listening to these and there's a particular question you want us to try to address or something like that, let us know. You can send us an email or drop something in the offering plate if you're coming on Sunday, or just talk to us. Although if you talk to us on Sunday morning, it'll be much better if you do give us some kind of a piece of paper or something that has that idea. Well, today the topic that we're going to tackle a little bit, and I think I mentioned this a couple Sundays ago, it's called the theology of the family. And I know whenever you talk about theology, for a lot of people, that's not a terribly exciting sounding topic. Other people get really excited. All right, let's get into theology. But typically we tend to think of that as something less than exciting. But I think when Kale came to me with the idea and kind of talking about some of the things that we'd like to address, it's a very timely topic. And I think at first, many of our listeners will go, well, Barry, I know about the family. I mean, I know the biblical basis of family and all that. But I want to set it up in this way, and then Kale, I'll let you kind of get going on a little bit. But there are so many issues that our kids are facing, and your kids and your grandkids and great-grandkids, that are so different than anything that you've ever faced. And when I say you, I'm talking about the people that are my age or older. Yeah. That particular group, it's just a completely different mindset. So things that we assume to be true, or that we assume that everybody knows, is no longer true. The younger generation does not necessarily know these things. They do not necessarily know the basis of them, and they do not necessarily believe them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important that we equip ourselves with some of the actual fundamentals and why family is so important, why theology of the family is so important. And I think that's what I'll just throw out as we get started this. So some of this may be stuff, okay, I already know this stuff, Barry, but it may be a way to help you engage with your grandchild who comes home from school or college and starts throwing out stuff that you've never heard of before. Mm-hmm. And I think some of these kinds of things will help you be a little more informed and aware of what's out there. So
yeah, and that's the goal here, is to make sure we all know, you know, what the biblical basis of the family is, but also so that we can equip, you know, the whole point of the church is to equip our people. You know, that's why we pastors are here, is to equip our congregation so that they can go and live their Christian life and so that they can teach people. You know, it's not, you know, we don't want to teach every person in the community. We want to teach the congregation so that the congregation can go out and teach people and bring them in. And so we have, you know, leaders within our congregation, you know, members who take care of things like that. So, but yes, well, with this episode, like you said, you know, we want to talk about that equipping. So, yeah. Well, do you want to just start at the beginning?
Well, that's a good place to start. That's a really good place to start. There's a song that starts with that.
And you probably,
especially Wizard of Oz. That's not right. Help me, Jason. Sound of Music. Oh, really good place to start. See, you probably never even seen the Sound of Music.
Oh, no, I have. So it's a classic.
It is a classic. Well, that doesn't mean you've seen it, though. Okay. All right. So when you say the beginning, you're literally talking about, let's go back to Genesis.
Absolutely.
Let's look at creation. And let's talk then a little bit about some of the principles that God set up right from the beginning to define family.
Yeah, so. And this won't be a Bible study series by any means, but this episode especially will be a little bit more Bible heavy. I've got a bunch of verses prepared, or at least a few, But yeah, in the beginning, at the beginning of humanity itself, right after Adam and Eve were created, before they went and lived out their lives in the garden and began to tend it and care for the living animals and the creatures or whatever, God established the first family. In Genesis 2:24, at the end of the second chapter of Genesis, where it went into a little bit more detail about the creation of the man and the woman, it says, "This is why a man leaves his father and mother and bonds with his wife, and they become one flesh." And I'm reading out of the CSB. And so if you're reading the King James, it would say, why a man leaves his father and mother and cleaves to his wife. And that's just the idea of coming very close together. So close, in fact, that they become one flesh in God's eyes. And, you know, since, you know, they're married. So temporarily, I mean, physically, they are one flesh. So that's the whole idea of being married. And that's a very, very, I mean, obviously very close and very special thing that only one man and one woman would have. You know, this passage is prescriptive in the way that God designed one man and one woman to be together. He made it in the way that he created us.
Okay.
So, but we've talked a lot about lately the way that people don't have the same presuppositions as us.
Mm-hmm.
And so just reading them this verse isn't going to do a whole lot. We can't just say, well, that's the way it is because God says so.
Mm-hmm. Right. So for those of us that grew up in church or with the Bible as the authority, that's enough for us. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is what God prescribed. This is how God set it up. So one of the questions that's very interesting to have a young child or a young person that's trying to wrestle with this, okay, if they don't even believe in God or they don't believe in that, it's kind of difficult for us to come to terms. But one of the questions would be, you know, why is it that in most cultures on the planet, from beginning of recorded human history, the concept of marriage was embedded? Now, mm-hmm. Some may point to some exceptions. There may be some exceptions of cultures and things that don't do marriage in the sense of one husband, one wife.
Mm-hmm.
But most cultures do and have. Why? And one of the things that people are pointing to now is that Scripture, you know, they view Scripture as the enemy. This is bad. All that type of stuff. But why is it there are so many cultures that are non-Christian that still cling and promote the concept of one husband, one wife, parents taking care of children?
Right. Well, it's interesting because there are so many attacks on that. And we can get more into that in a later episode. Mm-hmm. But there are so many people attacking and trying to literally dismantle this whole mm-hmm. system. And so we see a lot in social media and in just any media, movies, TV, books, magazines, whatever.
Yeah, we'll get to one of those, one that I want to get to in this episode, but then we'll get to some other specific mm-hmm. ones, I'm sure, later.
Yeah.
But for us, that principle, that concept of leaving and cleaving, husband and wife coming together, building that nucleus of a family then,
mm-hmm.
okay? So what else, where else then would you go as far as some of the beginning theology or principles then of the family?
Well, there's the idea of the parents, and we've talked about that, but and then the children themselves. There was three things that I was thinking about
mm-hmm.
with children. First of all, their responsibility. One of my favorite passages in the whole Bible, and one that I've been quoting a lot recently
mm-hmm.
For the family ministry, you know, teaching kids on Wednesday nights and stuff like that, mm-hmm. is from Deuteronomy 6, mm-hmm. verses 4 through 9. And it's where Moses is speaking to the Israelites, and he says, "Listen, Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These words that I am giving you today are to be in your heart. Repeat them to your children. Talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Bind them as a sign on your hand and let them be a symbol on your forehead. Write them on doorposts of your house and on your city gates." And Chris Fanning actually read that to us this last Sunday, and I love it. I read that to the kids last Wednesday. I talk about it a lot. I've included it in a lot of the philosophy paperwork for the family ministry that I'm trying to build up. So that's a really big deal, because parents have a responsibility explicitly from God to teach their own children and whoever is under their care.
Now, let me jump into a very practical aspect of that. Okay, so as we're teaching our children, when Moses is writing that, the children of Israel, mm-hmm. very specifically, he's referring to the law.
Yes, the words would be God's law.
The words of God's law. And so we think of, I'm not sure what all you think of when you think of the Old Testament law. There's a myriad of things that are there. I think one of the problems that Christian parents face today is, okay, Moses talked about teaching them the Old Testament law and the mm-hmm. principles there. Well, we don't teach the Old Testament law. So what specifically do we teach? And I think for a lot of parents, it's like we have this general feel of, yeah, we need to teach our children about Jesus, about God. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I don't know that we feel equipped to like, okay, so where do we start? What are the principles we actually teach them and show mm-hmm. them and repeat during the day and talk about, by the way, and those types of things? And I think that's where a lot of us as parents, and myself included, don't have a clear enough path of what it is we want to teach specifically.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that you prepared to answer that particular question, and that's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, maybe not as specifically as I would like to right now. But, I mean, that's one thing that we're trying to do here at the church is mm-hmm. to equip parents to do that. That's one of the, I mean, the fine-tuning your marriage. That's mm-hmm. one thing that you, I mean, you try to live out a clear example of a biblical marriage in front of your kids or grandkids or great-grandkids or whoever, or people that are just kind of been adopted informally into your family. You know, you try to live out a good, healthy marriage for them that glorifies God. You know, that's one thing, is you teach that to them by modeling that. And then if they ask questions or asking them questions about, you know, what do you think about what mom and dad do? You know, what do you think about...
Might be a dangerous question there.
Well, yeah, you know, like, what do you think about, you know, how much we... You know, you heard us arguing or something. And that's something, too, is some arguments can't be in front of kids. I wouldn't be afraid to argue. Not if, big.
If, right. And that'd be dependent on people's definitions of argue. Mm-hmm. Sure. But in other words, not to try to create this persona that our marriage is so perfect we never argue for kids. No. Because then when they're confronted with that issue, I know that'll happen between couples that come together. And one of the spouse's families always kept everything quiet behind closed doors, and they weren't aware of problems. The other family dealt with them out front and were aware of it. Well, then when they come together, they've got different views of how they should handle arguments. So that would be a specific, that's kind of a marriage issue. But let me give you one example of something I saw of some very specific teaching, and it really struck me. It's been several years ago, and it's my younger sister, the one who's in Hawaii, and her mm-hmm. husband, and it was while Kath and I were actually there visiting them in Israel, had the younger, one of the younger boys, who at the time was probably 3 or 4 years old, and we were just out in the front yard, and Israel was holding him, and just kind of, we were talking, and so I remember he just kind of held the young boy and just kind of looked at him and said, now, I'm trying to remember which one it was. There's four. So, but anyway, I'll say Nathaniel. I don't know if it was Nathaniel, but Nathaniel, did you listen to your mother today? Were you obedient today? Mm-hmm. And of course, Nathaniel real sheepishly kind of shook his head and everything. But in other words, he specifically asked him and confronted him with the principle of, you need to be obedient to your mother. Mm-hmm. And he was doing it very gently, very lovingly. And it just made an impression on me, because it was an intentional moment that he was using with his son. His son wasn't in trouble. He wasn't yelling at him. It wasn't because something bad had happened. It was just a natural, hey, what kind of day did you have with your mom today? Did you listen to her? Were you obedient? And I thought that was pretty powerful. Just something that he would do on a regular basis to all of his kids to help them understand the need of obedience.
Absolutely. And that's, you led right up into one of my other like observations about children too.
Okay.
There's three verses that I wrote down. Ephesians 6:1.
Okay.
and Paul writing that was referencing back to both Exodus 20:12 and Deuteronomy 4:39 through 40. And I'll read the verse from Exodus, from the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20:12 says, "Honor your father and your mother, so that you may have a long life in the land that the Lord your God is giving you." And he's speaking to adults. He's not, you know, that's mm-hmm. a commandment that he gave to adults, not just mm-hmm. to children, mm-hmm. like little children. You know, he's talking to full-grown married adults that have left their parents and cleave to their spouse. But still, he says, honor them. He's not saying obey them in every way. He's not saying, you know,
do whatever they do, no matter what they tell you to do.
Right.
Yeah, it's just simply you need to honor your parents.
Yeah, sure. He does say honor them. And that's the thing is parents need to be humble too. So whenever they do argue, whenever they do something wrong, they can come alongside their kids and be like, hey, you know, have a teaching moment even as they're humbling themselves. Like, I'm sorry I did that. I'm sorry I yelled at you or, you know, did something out of anger. That's a big deal. You know, whenever a kid can hear their mom or their dad admit that they're wrong, mm-hmm. that's a really big deal that I don't think a lot of kids get enough of. And of course, we still have that parental authority, but I think that kids are probably quicker to respect a parent if they can be humble in that way, you know, and show graciousness that way. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. And it comes full circle whenever Paul quotes those things.
Okay. Then Ephesians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you already read the Ephesians thing?
I didn't read okay. from Ephesians, okay. but it's,
yeah.
it's.
Go ahead and read the one from Ephesians then. Because okay. if it's the one I'm thinking of, it's the one that parents love to quote to their kids.
yeah, it is.
But I think that's why it's so important that you back it with the honor your parents, because you mm-hmm. as a parent need to model that with your own parents.
Yeah. All right. Because he says in Ephesians 6:1, Paul says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, because this is right." And
most parents, that's where they stop.
Yeah, that's right. Really.
That's right. That's important. And it is important, but it doesn't end there.
Yeah, children thrive whenever they have structure and they can obey and be under God-fearing parents. But Paul goes on in verse 2 verse 3 and 4, it's all good. But he says, "Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may have a long life in the land." And then he talks about fathers not stirring up anger in your children, but bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord.
Yeah.
So,
so one of the things, I read an article not too long ago. There was an article in the New York Times and talking about relationships in America in families and the author, not a Christian author, not coming at it from the same angle, but he was asking the question, what's happening to the family? Mm-hmm. And he didn't come up with any really good answers. In other words, he couldn't really describe why is the family failing? What is the problem with the family?
Yeah.
But Dennis Prager was commenting on that article, and he said what was shocking about the article was the response to the article. And the response was by many, many people, just thread after thread of people that were commenting that as they were adults or young adults, and just said, I don't want a relationship with my parents. Mm. And there was just this sense of almost callousness of that relationship is not worth it to me. Now, some of that's because those parents that had raised those kids were probably, in some cases, horrible parents. And, mm-hmm. and it was just much easier for them to walk away from that. But Prager was just talking about the lack of remorse for the loss of that relationship. I mean, I could understand somebody who'd been abused and stuff as a child, and so I don't want anything to do with my parents anymore, or my, you know, the abusing yeah. spouse. But yet, I think I would still feel a loss because I don't have that. And maybe that's part
well,
of the result
a,
of
there's losing. A hole
mm-hmm. yeah.
in the shape of mm-hmm. an older mentor mm-hmm. and a guiding hand.
Yeah. But it was interesting, the article, because as a non-believer, the person could see the detriment of the lack of family and the breakdown of family, but was totally unequipped to be able to actually handle why is it happening? Well, yeah. you and I as believers would say, well, it's pretty obvious why. It's because there is no respect of the family. There's no respect of parents. We've raised several generations now of people who do not honor the things of God, and the result, families getting further and further away from God.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, we just fully expect young people, young adults, to completely rebel and turn against their parents. Yeah, it's just the assumption now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in a youth ministry practicum with David right now, mm-hmm. and I think we've mentioned that a lot lately, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. it keeps coming up because it's very family-based. But it's interesting to see a lot of the books I'm reading, they are trying to get a more integrated family model of youth ministry mm-hmm. because they've recognized that's what they need, or what we need as Christians and as the church. But also, they're kind of on the defense because they just totally expect teenagers to rebel. And it doesn't necessarily have to be. I mean, there's always going to be a little bit of that.
Sure, different
but
levels.
But it doesn't have to be, you know, running away, going and breaking the law, you know, week in, week out.
Yeah, the typical, you know, drugs and alcohol and all that type of things. There's kind of the typical, here's how I'm breaking away from parents and that type of thing.
Yeah.
Let me come back to something you just said, just so our people kind of understand what, and I think it'll help them understand some decisions and things that we do in the future. You talk about an integrated model.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what's happened in a lot of churches the last several years is the concept of a youth minister. You know, there was a lot of church for many, many centuries before there were youth ministers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so part of the idea came from we need a specialist. We need somebody who's trained, somebody who kind of understands youth culture, and we'll let them to help train. But for a lot of parents, in a lot of cases, whether by intent or just kind of by accident, it kind of promoted the view of, well, the church is supposed to train our children. The youth men are supposed to train our children. And trying to separating families at church rather than them doing things together. So when you say a more integrated approach, it's what do we do to actually engage families together?
That's right.
And allow parents to see more of their leadership role.
Yeah. And one of the big things, I just read a chapter in this book that I've got right next to me yesterday. How much time do we have left?
Just okay. Keep talking. You're
yeah.
all right.
So I read this chapter last night, and it's all about working with families. And it says,
I forgot to start the timer. You can talk as long as you want.
We've got no time. Okay. And it says, you know, if it works well with teenagers, you know, if it's a home run or whatever, or if it's even okay, it's worth trying with teenagers and parents, mm-hmm. with students and their parents, all together in one place, not just with parents, but with all of them at once. And that, you know, youth ministers, family ministers, we are meant to be facilitators, mm-hmm. to grow the bonds of the family close together, because the family is a unit. And it's not an island where they have to be totally self-sufficient on their own, just the parents and the children, but they have to, because they have to be connected with the church. They have to have that Christian fellowship, because you can't do it on your own. You know, parenting is difficult. Learning, growing up and learning how to be a real adult with your parents, that's difficult. So we need help, and we need the church to guide us in that. And we need, you know, sound teaching. But each family is kind of autonomous. You know, they have their own things, their own rules, their, you know, traditions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try to help that. You know, we don't try to break that and say, you know, your youth minister is much cooler than your parents, so just listen to them and you'll come out okay. Because then we're just raising big teenagers.
Yeah, I know that I've read some statistics over the past few years where and I think one of it was from a youth minister saying, survey after survey still shows that parents have more influence over kids in the long run than a youth minister. Mm-hmm. And he said, thank goodness. He said part of it was a blow to his ego as he would reading these. But yet he recognized that as a youth minister, what the parents do is going to be more influential in the long run. And that's why he viewed himself as coming alongside the parents and mm-hmm. such, and just helping to reinforce and engage. And I think, you know, training, teaching parents these principles, back to that original idea of what are some of the specifics? Let's teach our parents what some of those specifics are and help give tools so that they can teach their kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Do you have any other verses as far as theology type sense, as far as the basic fundamentals?
Yeah, I think it would be a shame if I didn't get the one more thing about children.
Okay.
And then I wanted to mention something about singles too, before we cut out here. And I'll make it really, really quick. I'm going to quote Psalms 127 here. Because, you know, I think in the midst of parenting, it's easy to forget. You know, we have an almost one-year-old, Sage and I do right now, and sometimes it's easy to forget this verse right here. Psalm 127, Solomon actually writes, "Sons are indeed a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the sons born in one's youth. Happy is the man who has filled his quiver with them. They will never be put to shame when they speak with their enemies at the city gate." So, man, children, as difficult as they are, and as frustrating as they can be at times, we cannot forget that they are an enormous blessing from the Lord. They're not only our legacy, but, you know, they're little representatives of the Lord's graciousness and kindness, because he doesn't have to give us those things. And children can be such an enormous joy at other times.
All right. Tell you what, let's stop there. And mm-hmm. then with the theme on single, and there's so many other issues with the family, because one of the things I want to get to kind of we'll dovetail into that in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take a good hard look at some of the struggles that family have. The difference between ideal and then other ways that we sometimes have to operate in today's world. But I think let's just stop with children are a blessing from the Lord.
Yeah,
and I think that's a great place to stop. Okay, so if tune in next time, we're trying to come out with one about every couple of weeks, and we'll jump back into this theology of the family, talk about some of the other issues surrounding family, and there's so much more to visit with, but we'll stop here. I think we are about the 30-minute mark or so.
Right on.
All right. So, Cale, thank you so much for bringing some verses to mind, some of the idea. And, guys, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on the Grovecast.